Being asked to give a presentation can strike fear into the heart of even the most confident manager or leader. In this entertaining and informative interview, we ask presentation coach Graham Davis for his advice on the subject. As author of The Presentation Coach and a keynote speaker himself, Graham offers plenty of practical pointers on how to develop and deliver great presentations, ways to overcome presentation nerves, and how to cope with tricky question and answer sessions. I began by asking Graham how and why he had become a presentation coach.
Well, I've been a professional speaker ever since I left university. I studied law at Cambridge, and as I was training to be a barrister, I started doing professional after-dinner speaking, which I carried on during my 10 years that I practiced full-time as a barrister. But also on an ad hoc basis, I started coaching some of the executives for whom I was doing speeches in the evening. And I realized that there was quite a gap in the marketplace for someone who had a specific methodology for coaching, something that made their lives just that little bit easier, rather than just giving them off-the-cuff coaching. And so that's how I decided that I was going to become a presentation coach, and I founded the consultancy Straight Talking in 1995, essentially to make sure that my methodology was easier and more accessible to more people in the corporate world.
Could you tell us a bit more about what your methodology involves? In other words, what are the hallmarks of a good presentation?
Well, the hallmark of any good presentation, whether you use my methodology or anyone else's, or don't use a methodology at all and just somehow just get up and do it, is this. You must have calculated what results you need to get from a particular audience and then calculated the words that you need to say in order to get that result, and also have practiced the delivery of those words. Whatever methodology you use, those three ingredients must be part of it.
And in terms of structuring and having the relevant style and content, how do you get started?
Well, of course, a jumping off point or a start point is probably the thing that people fear most. You see, you read all these cliched statements that people fear public speaking more than any other human activity. I would subtly disagree with that. I actually think they hate or fear preparing to speak more than anything else. That blank computer screen, that white piece of paper in front of them, they don't really know how to start off. And what I do is I give them a methodology which I call the bare knuckle pipeline, which shows them how to get from their first contact with the concept of possibly speaking at an event in front of a particular audience, right through to what they should do after they finish answering questions after they've done that presentation. So I give them a pipeline which they should force themselves through in order to prepare and deliver the finished product.
What steps would be involved in that pipeline?
Well, the first thing you have to do is that it is essentially look at the audience and come to a decision as to what result you want to achieve. And that's what I call the finishing position. It's what you want to know the audience to know, think, or feel by the time you finish speaking. Secondly, you have to create a micro statement, which encourages them to travel on a journey to that particular finishing position. But I'll come back to that perhaps if I may. Thirdly, after you've created a micro statement, you brainstorm around it and find out what potential key elements could support that micro statement. And then after you've, element number three. After you've created those key elements, you have to decide how to start the presentation, which is element number four. And fifthly, you have to decide how to finish the presentation. And that, of course, is something which means that your last words are ringing in their heads more than anything else.
Okay, and so when you're applying this methodology yourself, if you're having to make a presentation, what sort of tools and techniques would you use that you could share with us?
Well, you see, the thing is, I've mentioned to you a five-step process. Well, to me, the crucial step in the process is creating the micro statement. And I'll give you a definition of what I call a micro statement. A micro statement is a sequence of words which quickly and compellingly captures the essence of your company, your product, or your idea in a way which is specifically tailored to the needs of that audience at that particular time. It's what you'd say if you only had 15 seconds in which to say it. It's your hardcore legacy which you want to leave behind with that audience above all else. And if you can start your thinking process about your presentation by creating that 10 to 15 second encapsulated micro statement, you're 70% towards creating a really good presentation. And that is a key piece of methodology that I always give to all of my clients.
Could you give me an example of a good micro statement?
Well, I'll deliberately, Katrina, give you two examples to give you an idea of how different micro statements are needed for different situations, which may seem very similar, but in fact aren't. Let's say I'm a golf club salesman working for, say, Callaway Golf Clubs, and I've got two different audiences to extol the virtues of a particular range of golf clubs to them. Now, the first audience is an audience of golf shop owners who are there in the room for entirely commercial reasons. The second audience, a few days later, on an entirely different occasion, may be actual golfers, people who are actually using the kit out on the golf course. My micro statement to the golf shop owners might be, the Big Bertha range of clubs is the right range of clubs for you because their high public profile makes them extremely easy to sell and make a profit from. But my micro statement to an audience of golfers, people who are actually using the stuff, might be, the Big Bertha range of clubs is the right range of clubs for you because they allow you to hit the ball the longest possible distance in a straightish line at the most competitive price. So, subtly different audiences, quite different micro statements, but essentially I'm aiming for a similar finishing position for both audiences. That is, I want both of them to buy Big Bertha golf clubs. But it had to be different micro statements to get them there.
You talk in your book, The Presentation Coach, about macro statements. Can you explain to our listeners what this is?
Well, a macro statement, the definition is exactly the same. It's a sequence of words which quickly captures the essence of something. But a macro statement is something that is not useful in your presentation, and it is not something you should be thinking about. A macro statement is a more general, unpersonalized message that you see perhaps in advertising campaigns, like at CNN, we give you real news real fast, or Federal Express delivers to the world on time. Those macro statements or messages are designed for the whole world to see, and that's their weakness. If you have the attitude of having a micro statement, which is much more bespoke, the audience will feel that you have tailored something specifically for them and their particular needs. And I believe that is vital for a good, effective, compelling presentation.
Okay, if we could just move on, and if I could ask about your experiences as a presentation coach, which aspects of presentation skills would you say you're asked to help people with most?
Well, usually I'm asked to come in as a presentation doctor, almost on a casualty basis, to try and deal with an emergency presentation situation, because someone has a big presentation that they've got to do within 2 days, or possibly even the next day, and they don't know where to start, or they have some idea of what they're going to say, but they really know that it's not the finished product. I have the knack of being able to look at both content and delivery in a way that is both effective in the short term, but hopefully gives them some long-term techniques that they can use after the crisis is over.
And what sort of techniques would you employ in these types of situations?
Well, when I'm brought in on an emergency basis, I get them to show me what they've got already. And essentially, usually at that juncture, all they can show me is some slides, mainly with a lot of bullet points on them. And of course, that is not a presentation. It is merely the visual aids which are supporting the presentation. They think that just because they've got some slides and lots of bullet points on, that they've prepared a presentation. And they haven't. They've merely prepared some notes which they're going to show the audience. I force them to put those slides aside and with me to create some actual words that they're going to say, and then they can consider whether there are visual aids that can support what those words are going to be to the audience. I actually force them to deal with things in an upside-down way to the way that they normally would.
Not everyone has access to a presentation coach in these types of situations, so what advice would you give to people who think their presentation is in a poor state?
What I would say more than anything else is this. Consider more than anything else what you're going to say to that audience, not what you're going to show to that audience. What they hear from you is what they'll remember, not what they see. So think more about the spoken word than you do about any of your slides.
And do you think it's a good idea to enlist some outside help?
I certainly would do, but of course you have to choose the outside help very carefully. you have to make sure that you are going to engage somebody who isn't just going to be a slide producer for you, and you have to engage somebody who's not just not going to be like some drama coach that's going to give you breathing techniques and how to produce your voice under pressure. I suggest to you that any coach you bring in has to be someone who has a holistic approach, someone who can actually look at the whole situation to give you a result rather than just one aspect of it.
What's the best way to approach a presentation or speech where you need to deliver bad news?
Well, I've never come across anybody who's walked out of any audience for any presentation, even when it's bad news, and I've never heard them say, do you know, that was a reasonable presentation in the circumstances, but I wish he had not got to the point so quickly. I wish he'd faffed around and dressed it up nicely with lots of pleasantries. Most people, even the worst possible news, deserve to be given the respect of it being given to them quickly, cogently, and effectively. I believe that presentations that deliver bad news have to be done bluntly, have to be done quickly, but have to be done courteously. And to me, courtesy involves not wasting people's time and not trying to dress it up.
Following on from that, how do you deal with challenging questions? I think this is something that people really dread. They've gone through the presentation process and then they've got to answer questions which could be quite tricky, putting them on the spot. What advice could you offer?
Well, it's interesting. Some people manage to find a methodology for both creating and delivering presentations and get into that methodology and use it very effectively. But they forget that really they should have some form of methodology for answering questions as well, rather than just dealing with them on an ad hoc basis. First of all, even if a question is challenging, you should always have the attitude that rather than that person that's asking you the challenging question having some sort of point to make against you or is attacking you in some way, you always have to have the attitude that they're merely challenging to get specific information. So, first of all, you don't take it personally as if it were an attack. But secondly, again, no matter how challenging the question is, whether it's friendly, whether it's moderately challenging, or whether it's very challenging, I suggest this formula. Face, illustrate, round off. Face means face up to the question straight away and bluntly give the answer in one sentence. Illustrate means give the evidence that supports the statement you've made in that one sentence. That evidence may be some statistics, it may be some facts, it may be a story, maybe an anecdote, maybe even something that you want to show that particular audience member. But the illustration phase is essentially the evidence for the statement that you've made probably straight away. And round off means round off the whole thing so that you're actually making sure that the answer to the question is nicely packaged and it looks like it has a beginning and an end. The rounding off statement should be an echo of the face-up statement that you made right at the start of the answer.
What advice would you give people about coping with pre-presentation nerves?
The best way of getting over pre-presentation nerves is to prepare really well and to be proud of your preparation. There's an awful lot to be nervous of. If you are presenting to an audience and you haven't presented something that really caters for that audience's needs, as well as catering for your own needs, you really should be nervous because they should be very angry with you indeed because you're wasting their time. But if you have done the right preparation, you should be onto a positive mental position straight away. That's the long-term source of getting rid of nerves. The short-term way of getting rid of nerves is this. It's to focus entirely on the first two or three sentences of your presentation in, say, the 1 minute before the speech, the 10 minutes before the speech, or even half an hour before the speech. Make sure you are merely focused on rehearsing in your own mind those first few words in the same way as, say, a sprinter before the start of a 100-meter sprint is focusing on the first few steps, his technique for the first few steps as soon as he's running out of the blocks. Your blocks that you're running out of are the very first words that come out of your mouth, and they are an excellent area of focus, and if you're just focused on them, frankly, you haven't got the mental energy to have any nerves as well.
My next question is, PowerPoint, a force for good or a force for evil?
PowerPoint isn't a piece of software for most people. It's a drug that they become reliant on. And PowerPoint Prozac has the effect of dulling the audience's sensibilities whilst providing a moderate degree of addicted comfort to the presenter. Essentially, PowerPoint should be used sparingly, something that illustrates something striking, something which can represent something visually that you can't possibly say in words, like a striking picture, a diagram which represents the product. It should not be death by bullet point. No one has ever walked out of a presentation and said, "What a good presentation I just watched. I wish he'd use more PowerPoint with more bullet points and more words on each bullet point." Very, very few people found PowerPoint a force for good, and I think I'll always find it a force for evil.
Is there anyone who stands out for you as a truly exceptional presenter or speech maker?
The best speaker I have ever seen in the world is a chap called Anthony Robbins, an American author and motivational speaker. He's got a huge smile, which is smile like a laser beam. And so when he smiles, my word, does he smile, it lights up the room. I once saw him a few years ago speaking at the Wembley Conference Centre with 2 45-minute breaks. He essentially spoke from 8:30 in the morning until 6:30 at night. And he was just as compelling at 6:29 as he was at 8:31. And the real key to his success was that, yes, he prepared his material brilliantly, which was the distillation of 3 best-selling books. And secondly, he had great delivery skills, which were clearly honed by months and months of rehearsal. But thirdly, overall, he managed to convey a level of sheer intense enjoyment that was infectious to the 4,000 people in that audience. So essentially, he made a very long public speech seem more like rock and roll.
Which have been the most memorable for all the wrong reasons?
Okay, I'll give you two, and they come from politics more than anything else. First of all, I saw Bill Clinton doing the speech many years ago, which was the speech was considered to be a great honor in the Democratic Convention at the time, the speech where the person who is doing the speech is introducing the person who's been elected as their presidential candidate, and Clinton was to do the introductory speech. Clinton's speech was so long and rambling that people in the audience actually started taking out their napkins from lunch and waving them above their heads as white flags of surrender, begging Clinton to sit down and stop speaking. But he carried on and on and on. He spoke for so long and so boringly that it nearly eliminated him from public life forever. But fortunately for him, he managed to rehabilitate himself, and he made sure that he never did a speech that was longer than 30 minutes again ever in his life. And so that was a good learning experience. Secondly, in British politics, I saw Ian Duncan Smith speaking to the Conservative Party conference. His speech was so bad, so appallingly constructed and delivered in an even worse way, that his sheer lack of competence was a source of inspiration for me.
Are you aware of any new developments in technology that will change the way that people present in the future?
Well, people are very excited about iPads, and there are various bits of software that are coming out that make slides just that little bit better, a little bit more animated, or video more easy to access on screens, and they're fine. And I'm not a complete dinosaur when it comes to technology. But I think that the more technology is used and the better it gets, the more important the use of the human mouth, the human voice, and human-to-human contact comes. Because you have to make sure that even more so that your micro-statements are more and more precise, that the words you choose to support them are more and more carefully selected. Because if you don't watch it, as technology becomes more and more prevalent and more professional, the human voice can get lost. And so as technology becomes better, there's much more of a need for human-to-human presentation to become that much more professional.
If we could just finish up by asking, if you were to give our listeners 3 golden rules for professional presenting, what would these be?
Whether you're speaking to one person or to 1,000 people, whether you've got a minute to speak or whether you're speaking for an hour, here are the rules. Say it, support it, and shut it.
Thank you very much for giving us an insight into the makings of a good presentation and the challenges and the pitfalls to avoid. That'd be really helpful for our listeners.